Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Of course, along the way, if you have any questions, feel free to give us a call at any time throughout the broadcast. 806-745-5800, 806-745-5800. You can also text in your questions as well. Here on the show today, of course, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Melody Wilkes, health coach, who also has her own program, Fridays at 12 to 12:30.
Aw, thanks. Shameless plug.
No, it's all good. It's all good because we do a tremendous amount of health programs here on AM 580 and very proud of that fact and getting out great information on how to help people with their overall health and what we need to do from a societal standpoint to achieve optimum health. And the only way to do that is to make food our medicine. And that's what we talk about here. Although supplementation does play a role, but if you're eating garbage, garbage in, garbage out, and you get cancer, just saying.
That's your health in a nutshell.
Show's over, folks.
Mr. Health Coach. You must be married to
Dr. Ben and I can just be quiet. We're just going to listen to Wade this morning.
No, I think we give Melody the floor. I'm excited you have that show because I tell people all the time. In fact, we have a senior from Tech who's been shadowing at our clinic, and she's thinking about medical school versus physical therapy and OT and different things. And it's always a challenge for me. I have these students come and they want to go to medical school, but you know, deep down I know that if all these patients would go get the information that these health coaches have, mm-hmm. they'd be better off because doctors aren't educated. It takes 25 years, it seems like, for the latest, greatest research that's coming out to change the way a doctor practices medicine. So, I mean, doctors are still practicing 20th century medicine. It's crazy, and health coaches are on the cutting edge because they're not in such a institutionalized system that changes so slowly. So this gal's having to really go back and forth in her mind with whether she needs to continue her higher education in medical school versus do something else more in the health coaching lines, which sounds crazy. You don't need a college degree for health coaching.
No, but
you
health
can
coaching
help
is
so many
frustrating
more.
Because people really don't know what to do with you.
Yeah, they don't.
And they still want to go to their doctor and just get a pill.
Yeah, that's true. But as more and more people are getting sicker and sicker and sicker, I mean, mm-hmm. there's always going to be the challenge of, hey, who are you? And you don't have a degree or mm-hmm. you don't have an MD behind your name. And that's the debate with these students that come. I tell them all, you know, if you want people to really listen to you, you kind of need the degree. But all that stuff you go learn, just compartmentalize that and learn it. Or remember that what you're learning in medical school is how to categorize people, how to label them, how to then use a pharmaceutical to treat the symptom. You're not addressing the root core issue, which is going to be a mitochondrial issue, as we've learned about on this show. And if people have been longtime listeners, they're going to understand the mitochondria is where it's at. And it's an energy issue. And that boils down to epigenetics, food, environment, stress, lifestyle. Light, the things I'm learning lately about light. I've been studying this for over a year now, and I still can't wrap my head around it enough to bring it onto the show, but someday we will, because you're getting into quantum. And there's photon receptors on the mitochondria. I mean, light receptors on the mitochondria. So getting into quantum mechanics, biomechanics, quantum biomechanics, it's amazing what's going on in the body. And this is cutting-edge stuff. Nobel Prizes are being handed out for this kind of stuff, but doctors aren't learning it. Definitely a doctor that's been out of school for a little while sure doesn't know it, but I think even the curriculum hadn't changed so very much.
So are you talking sunlight, or are you talking like the red light, or
natural light and artificial lights, and the impact of that on the mitochondria? Obviously, it will, as we'll find out in future shows. Natural light is very beneficial to our mitochondria. Artificial light is not. Circadian biology is a new term. Circadian biology, it turns out, probably runs, really has the most impact on our mitochondria than anything, even more than fats, carbohydrates, and you know, the whole food debate, high fat, low fat, high carb, low carb,
wait a minute. You're all
saying that kind
that
of stuff.
The sun is, that's more important than having a healthy diet?
I'm not going to say more important. There are those out there who say, yes, it is more important.
So, hey.
Circadian biology. Your body will know what to do with that carb if it has the right energy inputs, meaning the right light.
You
which,
know
again,
what?
I don't have my head wrapped around this enough to speak educate, so I probably shouldn't even brought it up.
Well, no, that's interesting.
That's where the future's going. And I mean, it's already here. That these guys are out there explaining this and teaching this. And so we'll get to it at some point. But my point is med school education just stuck in the past, and it's kind of crazy.
So are we going to have a fifth pillar here?
I don't know.
Great question.
I don't know. I'll have to think about that. But obviously the movement pillar we've learned just in the past few shows, there's more to movement. It's definitely not go exercise to lose weight. We've said that for a long time now. Weight gain's more about hormones and hormones that tell you to store fat like insulin.
Ugh.
We recommend movement in order to oxygenate the body. But now movement also to hydrate the body. Again, as we learned the last couple shows, the way the body irrigates internally, the drip irrigation system is the fascia, this spider web-like material that runs all throughout the body from your top of your head to your toes. And the water droplets come out of that fascia, that spider web material, when you move. So movement for oxygenation, movement for hydration, but also where do we move? Are we supposed to be moving inside a gym under blue light, artificial light? Or are we supposed to be outside? Again, the standard I always use is God's original intent. How did God originally intend for us to live, eat, sleep, move, hydrate, all of it? And obviously outside under natural light is what
he intended. If it's cloudy out like it's been,
it still gets through.
It's still good.
It still gets through. And even if you just crack a window in your car, I'm talking even the vent of the sunroof where there's just a crack where those light rays can enter the car, even if it's not shining directly on you, just the way those photons move and get in, they will impact your mitochondria in a beneficial way.
And amazing.
The artificial stuff.
Yeah.
Impacts
golf cart
it.
Rides.
I mean, when you start your day,
walks,
you wake up and it's still dark. You turn on a light or you look at your iPhone right away. I mean, you're sending artificial blue light, meaning the wavelengths of that light is not natural, and it has an impact on the brain, the circadian rhythm, the hormone release, even the way you burn a carb or a fat. The whole mitochondria is impacted by the light. So Dr. Jack Cruz, which if you go Google him or listen to him, be careful. He's got a lot of language that he doesn't mind spouting off that would not be G-rated. He's a neurosurgeon from New York City, recently moved to New Orleans, and he's all about the light. But he's really on to this light mitochondria interaction with the light in a lot of ways. I'm totally in line with what he's saying, but I'm still filtering through. He's an evolutionary biologist, and obviously I'm not. I believe we're created, so I've got to filter it through my my paradigm. But going back to just energy in general, people forget, hopefully our listeners know, but in general, the public, med students included, we're so focused on anatomy. This guy 500 years ago, Vesalius, he's the one that first dissected out and basically labeled all of our anatomy. He was this scientist or physician who's the father of anatomy, basically. And in med school, first year med school, gross anatomy lab at UT Houston. It was downstairs in the basement. We go down there, we get assigned a cadaver the first day of school, and you just start cutting that cadaver open in an orderly manner under the guidance of your gross anatomy professor, and you're dissecting out every little thing. I mean, and you learn a lot. Obviously, you learn a ton. But that whole paradigm of anatomy-driven medicine was started 500 years ago, and it still persists today. So we think, okay, if we have an eyeball problem, we see the ophthalmologist. If we have a headache or brain problem, we see the neurologist. If we have a heart problem, we see the cardiologist. All of this specialization and compartmentalization is based on anatomy. And then Mendel came along 150 years ago, Mendelian genetics. He's a guy that looked at pea plants and then fruit flies and saw how we inherited traits. So that came into the mix. Of course, Watson and Crick in the 50s with their discovery of the double helix and DNA and all that. So that paradigm's there too. But Newton talked about mass, which is anatomy, your bones, your eyeballs, your heart, your brain. That's matter. That's mass. But for matter to move, you need energy. And human beings are one of the most animated pieces of matter, or if not the most animated piece of matter in existence, meaning we've got to have a lot of energy. Meaning, you know, at least 50% of this equation is energy, not just anatomy. It's not just your eyeballs, your heart, your bones, your brain, your skin, your blood cells. It's the energy. And so when you just look at things from an anatomy, from an anatomical perspective, which is what doctors do, then you miss it. And if you don't, you know, I'm going to give an example of what if there's a systemic problem, a full body problem, and the consequences of this problem happen to manifest as a headache. Well, then you can look in the brain all day long for a reason for a headache, but if the source, the true reason was a systemic or from your full body. But it's the same with the heart. It's same with the gut. It's same with, I mean, we talked about this with Dr. Lewis, the Alzheimer's guy, and his partner from Harvard, when they're identifying changes in the brain, in the eyeball, in the retina, to predict heart disease and to predict Alzheimer's. Well, how could the eyeball predict a heart attack? How could an eyeball predict Alzheimer's? Because it's a prediction of inflammation, and inflammation is a systemic issue. So that's number one. We've got to get off the anatomical thought process. Dr. Thomas Cowan, Human Heart, Cosmic Heart. We interviewed him last year. I'm interviewing him again next week, so stay tuned. But his whole theory on heart attacks, it's all about energy. It's all about the mitochondria. And it's the same with Alzheimer's and autism and autoimmune disease and all these things. It's about the mitochondria, meaning energy.
Do I have a way of like testing or looking under a microscope at your mitochondria to kind of see what it's doing?
You can look under the microscope and see the anatomy of a mitochondria, but what you're getting at is the energetics of it. Like, you can pop your hood of your car and look at the carburetor and see that you have a carburetor. And it, as long as all the parts and pieces look like they're grossly intact, you might think it's okay. But then go turn the engine on and hit the gas pedal and try to drive and see what's the function of the carburetor. Is it making energy? So that's probably what you're asking.
So there's no way to like look at an individual's mitochondria and see what's malfunctioning in
it. To see what kind of energy production it's doing or how efficient it is. Indirectly, yes. Dr. Frank Schallenberger, who hopefully I can interview someday, he's got a machine that basically measures your energy input and output indirectly via how much oxygen you're breathing in and how much exhaust you're putting out, carbon dioxide. So if you can measure how much oxygen's coming in, measure the carbon dioxide coming out, you can get basically an indirect measurement of how efficiently you make energy.
That's pretty cool.
So it is a cool little machine. I've thought about trying to get one for our clinic.
Get one.
Hopefully someday we can.
Hey, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's the way we look at the energetics. And that's what we need to be looking at, the energetics. We've totally missed it the last 100 years or more of looking at only anatomy. So our disease rates aren't budging. Everything's getting worse, actually, because the things that zap our mitochondrial energy are all epigenetic. They're all outside our genes. They're all diet and lifestyle related, and light related is part of lifestyle. So that's why everyone's so sick. Americans are the sickest and getting sicker because we focused anatomy, not energy.
Yes. Well, speaking of that, I was just reading this Medical News Today website, and it was talking about the discovery of a previously unknown effect of amino acid called alanine on cell metabolism could lead to new drugs for short-term control of blood glucose. Yep. Now, this amino acid are obviously the small building block molecules the body uses to make proteins. Alanine is classified as a non-essential amino acid because the body can make it without having to source it from food. But scientists at Joslin Diabetes Center and the Harvard Medical School, both in Boston, Massachusetts, have now uncovered a new and unique role for Al-Anon by studying it in laboratory cells and in mice.
Read that first sentence or two again.
It was the discovery of a previously unknown effect of the amino acid alanine on cell metabolism.
Okay, right there. Cell metabolism.
Okay.
That's energy production.
That's right.
That's the function of your carburetor, to tell you how it's functioning. So what they're doing, I haven't read that study, but basically they're getting in there and studying the mitochondria, and now they're going to try to find a way to manipulate via artificial drugs a particular piece of that pathway.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to do.
And so they'll get some
short-term control of blood.
Short-term limited benefit with unintended consequences. When you put a chemical man-made drug into the mixture and you start influencing the carburetor that way, you'll be able to artificially tweak it, jazz it, boost it for short-term gain of
supercharge it.
But that's not even addressing their diet, lifestyle.
And the other part of that first sentence was a recently discovered or unknown, a previously unknown. There's so much previously unknown stuff about our mitochondria, including the way that light and these photons interact with the mitochondria.
It says it appears that the amino acid activates an enzyme called AMP kinase that increases energy production in cells. This results in a short-term reduction in blood glucose that does not involve insulin.
You can increase that enzyme, AMP kinase, naturally. You don't have to do it artificially with some man-made chemical to manipulate that cycle. When you try to bypass God's design or bypass the natural mechanisms in the mitochondria or try to get in there and start micromanaging one particular tiny aspect of it, you're going to get in trouble. So my prediction on that is it's going to fail. Long-term consequences, unintended consequences are not going to be good. So helping blood glucose regulation in a diabetic is quite simple. And I was just telling my wife that this morning. One of my old patients from Post I ran into the other day, and I told my wife, I said, yeah, I remember 10 years ago when I first saw him in Post. He worked for the railroad, and he was diabetic, and his blood sugars were too high, so I was talking about doing insulin shots on him, and he told me he couldn't do insulin shots because then he couldn't have his job as a railroad, I guess, an engineer. So we worked real hard at trying to bring those sugars down with pills, unsuccessfully. Now he's, when I ran into him the other day, he told me he's not working anymore for the railroad. And my point to my wife was, man, I wish I would have known back then what I know now. That's like walk in the park, easiest thing in the world to educate a patient on how to drop their blood sugar down to normal, where he wouldn't even need to be on the pills, much less insulin. Could have saved his job. Not only that, he's got bad joints and all kinds of inflammatory processes now, and I'm not going to make any predictions, but we know diabetics tend to get more Alzheimer's, heart attack, and stroke, and cancer, and it's just sad for me that I didn't know this stuff 10 years ago to really help that gentleman, and most of Americans don't know it, and the doctors don't know it, and the health coaches do, but people won't listen to the health coaches. They won't pay out of pocket for a health coach half the time. They'll only go to where their insurance pays. Well, their insurance pays for the system that doesn't get it and that's producing the worst results. So anyways, mitochondria and energy production is where it's at. And I hope everyone notices that's kind of been the theme of 2018. Is all about the mitochondria. That's what Morley Robbins talks about all day long, is how do you take, you know, really, let's take this back to the sun. The sun obviously is very energetic, and those sun rays come down to a plant, and a plant takes sunlight and carbon dioxide and water and produces basically carbohydrate, produces energy. We consume that carbohydrate when we eat that plant, and what do? We break that down. Carbohydrates are carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. We put that carbohydrate into the mitochondria, and the mitochondria is taking that fuel, adding oxygen from what we breathe, and it's producing energy for us, for our cells, ATP. It also produces water, and it produces carbon dioxide, the things the plant needs. So right back to the plant. I was just teaching my kids this weekend. They have a quiz on photosynthesis. and oxidative phosphorylation. And so what a human being produces as exhaust, carbon dioxide and water, it's what the plant needs in combination with sunlight to give us back oxygen and fuel. And it's just this beautiful teamwork back and forth. But the mitochondria, as Morley Robbins so aptly points out, can't function properly without enough copper. You've got to have these minerals, copper and magnesium in particular. You've too much excess unbound iron is going to jack up the mitochondria. It's going to disrupt the flow of energy from taking that fuel and oxygen into ATP. Iron's going to block that, or at least slow it way down. You need the right fats. The oxygen that comes into your carburetor, into your mitochondria, that comes when you breathe. That's why we move, to get more oxygen in. But then there's 7 cell membranes that oxygen has to pass through from your lung to that mitochondria, to that carburetor. Those cell membranes are made of fats. There are fats that repel oxygen, and there's fats that attract oxygen. So you want to be full of the fats that attract oxygen, so that oxygen you breathe when you're walking around the park can actually get down into your carburetor and make energy. So the fats that attract oxygen are coconut oil, avocado oil, butter, olive oil, palm oil.
Anchovies.
Anchovies, DHA found in the anchovies, sardines.
I love those. Those
are
yesterday.
Excellent sources of fat.
I just need to learn how to eat sardines. It just they're smells
so
like cat
wonderful.
Food to me.
Well, there's certain flavors. You know, they have a lemon flavor and different.
Do you just eat them out of the can?
Where was that the other day?
What do you do with them?
At a Kraft House.
Salad?
Put a plug in for Kraft House.
A salad? You put them in macaroni and cheese.
I do that.
You can put them in anything, but put a lot of Tabasco on them. But Kraft House, their menu changes all the time, so I don't know if they still have them, but this is probably a month ago. They made them with some sort of blend of spices on them.
A lot of them
come
with extra virgin olive oil.
Can you, like, fry them up in a pan?
Nah,
yeah, you could. You're going to break some of that fat down, though.
You want it raw.
Really?
Yeah.
Mix it with a bunch of pickles and avocado mayonnaise and make like a tuna salad.
Ooh, that's
good. Oh, salad. I can maybe do that.
Get those almond crackers.
Don't they still have the eyeballs in them, though?
No. Some do.
Not the ones
these
I
are
eat.
These are headless.
But
I like them.
That's the good fat that you need. DHA is great at bringing oxygen into the body. And DHA is also in a grass-fed beef. Grass-fed roast has more of that than a salmon does.
Now that I can... I try. Oh.
So pasture-raised poultry, grass-fed beef, wild-caught shrimp, wild-caught salmon, wild-caught sardines, these kind of things. That's all the good fat that attracts oxygen.
Would that be better than flaxseed or no?
Flax is okay. The problem is if you're just buying flaxseed oil.
Or cod oil.
Cod oil is okay. All these oils that aren't actually in a food form, if you're talking about a liquid or a capsule version, mm-hmm. it's all about the processing of it. When they squeeze that cod liver mm-hmm. or that flaxseed, how much pressure, heat, solvents, chemical solvents did they have to use to extract?
How clean is it?
How rancid is it? Flaxseed will tend to go rancid pretty quick. It oxidizes quickly. It reacts with the oxygen quickly.
Now, all those sardines are coming in cans.
They are. You want to get the right kind of
the PBA
cans.
Free.
Yeah, BPA-free cans. But I've got to talk about the fats that repel oxygen. Canola, soy, corn, the vegetable oils, margarine, Crisco, all the fats Americans have been eating for the last 40, 50 years. So that's why you can make such an impact on the energy part of this equation, which really, it's more than 50-50. Your anatomy is just anatomy. It's all about the energetics, really. So frankly, we need to completely turn the medical school curriculum upside down and get these students trained in quantum physics, quantum medicine, quantum mechanics and energy, energetics, photons and all that. But back to the carburetor, you want the right fats in and you want to avoid the wrong fats so that you can bring that oxygen in.
And what do you recommend on that, doctor? Would it be like 1 or 2 grams a day on the average person to have DHA and all that, or what do you recommend? Because I know I was reading on the back of my anchovy can or anchovies yesterday, had the nutritional facts on there, and that one little tin provided like a gram.
A gram's great.
More of each kind of the DHA and what was the other one? The
EPA.
EPA.
Yeah, a gram's awesome. That's 1,000 milligrams, which, I mean, pretty much everyone agrees that's a great dose.
So one a day.
Now, some patients who are really challenged, really inflamed, are absolutely full of the wrong fats because they've been for 30 or 40 years filling themselves up with the wrong fats. We might try to go to 2 or 4 grams a day just to get them to move that bad fat out quicker, replace that bad fat. If someone is having some cardiovascular issues or, I mean, we say cardiovascular cancer, some of these high, the quote-unquote diseases that are, I believe, the most, highlight the most dysfunctional energy production are neurodegenerative, that's like Alzheimer's, cardiovascular, like heart attacks,
right,
and then cancer. Those are your top three, probably biggest red flags that your carburetor is absolutely shot. I mean, your ability to make energy is totally, totally shot. So those patients, I want to crank them up more into that 2 gram to 4 gram for a time period, really push the good fats hardcore and get that mitochondria. Because the beauty about the mitochondria is your bad ones that are inefficient, they'll kill themselves. They will take themselves out, especially when you fast. And the more efficient ones will reproduce themselves. So initially, if we really flood the body with the right nutrients, mainly the good fats, and occasionally fast, you can get a lot done with killing off your bad mitochondria.
Yeah, but when you fast, though, from what I understand, you have to do at least 48 hours to start seeing that happen. You can't do
you get minimal hour. Less than 48 hours, you'll get minimal.
You got to do like
autophagy. Yeah, 48, and really 4 days.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
4 days is the magic.
Yeah, once a month.
Yep.
For a clean out.
So we'll need to have Thomas Siegfried on at some point. He wrote a book, I believe it's called Cancer's a Metabolic Disease. Or no, Nasha Winters wrote that. We did have Dr. Nasha Winters on the program last year.
Yeah, and
that,
I remember her.
She's all about cancer being a metabolic. When you hear cell metabolism, like Wade's article he read, or metabolic diseases, or energy production, mitochondria, it's all the same stuff. Dr. Jack Cruz, he calls his followers mitochondriacs. It's all about the mitochondria. And Nasha Winters wrote a book saying cancer is all about the mitochondria not working right. Thomas Siegfried did the same thing. So that's where the future's at. It's all about energy production, mitochondria, and fasting induces a very, very efficient mitochondria. But what Dr. Jack Cruz is going to tell you is, yeah, fasting's good, and yeah, trying to eat real food, number one, is the rule. And number two, if you could get a little more high-fat, moderate protein, low-carb, which is pretty much keto, you know, that's good. The paleo, ancestral, keto, that's obviously better than the standard American. But the thing he's going to move you forward to, advance you in, is the light. If you are not getting the right kind of light in, then your leptin, which is the hormone that basically runs your metabolism is going to be jacked up. It's not going to work right.
So how much light? Like I try to get 15 minutes. So more than that?
That's great. But he's all about the timing too. So first thing in the morning, when that sunrise is coming, that sun is just peeking over the horizon, you're getting certain wavelengths of blue and red light that are different than the 10 a.m. and the noon wavelengths, different than the 3 p.m. and different than sunset. Some people argue that the sunrise and sunset wavelengths are the best, healthiest for you and set your circadian rhythm the best. But he's going to try to advise you to take a smoke break, quote unquote. Obviously, don't go smoke, but your smoke break is really a sunshine break. Tell your boss, I got to go sit outside, and you do it for 5 minutes every hour of the day. It's that important. Obviously,
in real life, how do you implement that? And how much skin exposure are we talking about?
Again, he's the extreme. So he's going to tell you
naked in our backyard.
You got it.
Our neighbors have second stories.
But I'm telling you, this guy moved to New Orleans from New York because he knew he couldn't quit his job as a neurosurgeon. That's his way to make money. But in that OR, he's under blue lights the whole time. So to combat that, he's obviously not going to – I mean, he didn't quit his job. But to mitigate that, he moved to New Orleans because New Orleans has an international airport – It's a one-hour flight to the Yucatan. So he flies down to Mexico where he can get better light exposure, and he does this on a routine basis. So he's basically trying to live in the modern world under blue light, under, I mean, the screens, our iPhones, our iPads, our computer screens. You can wear the blue light blocking glasses, which he does recommend.
Well, my phone has a
blue light blocker. And that's all good, but beyond just blocking the artificial stuff or trying to reduce it, is you've got to get the real stuff in. But again, I don't have my head wrapped around all that yet. So once I do, maybe we'll bring Dr. Cruz on to discuss it. He's so far out there with these photons and quantum physics.
Mornings, I'm cooking breakfast, trying to get kids out of bed. It's like, and it's freezing cold now. So it's like,
And that's where he said, even if you just crack a window, the photons come in to the environment and still have a positive impact.
Wouldn't it be cool if our houses had, like, retractable roofs?
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
It would be. Okay, wait, I think it's time for break. We're going to lose people, though. I'm barely getting West Texas to realize we got to get off this high-carb standard American diet. So
I'm telling you, I'm a firm believer.
We need skylights in the control room.
No, actually.
Knock these things out. Got a flat roof, it'd be easy.
I know. I know that people who have outdoor jobs. I mean, when I used to have an outdoor job before I started doing this crazy business of radio. And for the last 25 years, that was a bad part about it, but I was outdoors all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been that all that protected me from all the wildness of being exposed to those pesticides, because the sun being out there all the time as a job was, I always felt good. And, you know, you get into these buildings now and I don't know. There's something to that. I'm with you. That makes sense. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stick around. Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Right here on the program, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. You can check out past shows archived at veritasmedical.com. And, of course, along the way right here on the show, if you have a question, call or text 806-745-5800. We're about 19 away from the top of the hour here on the program. We're talking about all things health, all things that are rough. What do you say? The last segment, I thought, man, I have to go out once every hour and stand out there for like 5 minutes, totally naked.
You don't have to.
Naked on MLK.
I wouldn't recommend naked for you, Wade.
At noon, you can come by and see
in the
Wade.
Birthday suit right here.
There would be wrecks out there.
Oh, there would be.
One of Jack Cruz's followers / maybe he's a patient, has cystic fibrosis, which, I mean, that affects the lung and affects your ability to oxygenate the body. Most people don't live real long with cystic fibrosis. But what he's basically done with this patient is train him to, in layman's terms, I'll say, make his skin his third lung, basically. He's breathing through his skin. He's oxygenating through his skin, but a lot of it's through the photons. So this guy's a rock climber. The cystic fibrosis patient, I think he's in his late 30s now or early 40s, and a rock climber, very active. And improving his oxygen carrying capacity. So it's some fascinating stuff. But
you know, the thing about it is, though, Doctor, is how often had we been trained and conditioned by the conventional wisdom of medicine to say, oh, yeah, protect yourself, cover up, don't get any sunlight, lather on the sunscreen. I mean, we've talked about that before, but we've grown up as in our society of saying sunlight is bad.
Well, the first thing I try to teach my patients is common sense. First, you got to run it by your common sense meter. Then maybe the scientific evidence-based meter, because scientific evidence-based studies are so fraught with fraud, according to the editor-in-chief of the Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine. But anyways, common sense is 100 years ago, there was really no skin cancer. really there wasn't much cancer, period. So that's a whole nother discussion. Why weren't we sick 100, 120, 150 years ago? So when we were washing our clothes outside, working in the field outside, riding in our horse and buggy outside, we're outside all the time 150 years ago, and there wasn't any skin cancer. That's your first common sense question. Why is that? Because the body was designed with built-in protective mechanisms to deal with the negative part of the sunlight. There's a lot of positive and beneficial parts of the sunlight. And when the whole system's working perfectly together, your body's equipped to deal with the negative. The antioxidant enzyme system in the skin will deal with the negative free radicals that are produced by some of the rays, the UVB rays. So we can get the benefit of all the rays. So it was a big mistake getting out of the sun. And this, we kind of dove into this deeply last year, last summer. We had the author of a book about sunscreen. Forget her name, but y'all can go back in the archives and look. Her book's name is Sunscreen Biohazard, but the book's full of all the science behind the chemical toxicity of sunscreen and how we actually need these rays, these sun rays.
And now it's actually harming the oceans too.
Yeah, that's how she got into it. The sunscreen was killing the coral reefs. But it disrupts our mitochondria. That's the biggest part, and that's the reason I had her on the show, was those sunscreen chemicals are mitochondrial disruptors. So our patients, we try to educate them and teach them to be trained in identifying things in their life that damage their mitochondria, and avoid those. Find things in their life that benefit their mitochondria and do more of that. Expose yourself to more of that.
And what do you think about light or their lack of with depression?
That's a well established in the literature. Just from dysthymic disorder, which is that wintertime blues from not enough sun exposure, but all the way to full-blown serotonin production for generalized from major depressive disorder down to smaller just mood disorders, but even generalized anxiety disorder. It's all about the serotonin production. Anytime a hormone has to be produced, you have to think about energy. Anytime anything in the body has to be produced, it's all going to boil down to energy. You know, people ask me, "What I get the cold and flu all the time." Well, your immune system cells aren't working right. Why aren't they working right? Because they don't have the energy to work right. I have brain fog. Well, your neurons aren't working right because they don't have the energy to work right.
I read a study that just was reading another medical study here while you were talking, said that it's estimated 50 million Americans take some kind of benzo for anxiety, these panic disorders.
You want to talk about something
million?
That disrupts your mitochondria?
Unbelievable.
The benzodiazepines, Xanax, clonazepam, and we use them short term. We don't recommend them long term, but if someone's in a real pickle, they might need something to, get them off the edge of the ledge right now. Yeah, but long term, no way. It absolutely kills the mitochondria. There's a Dr. Amen. We've got to get him on the show too.
Oh my gosh.
Daniel Amen.
I love that guy.
He's written a number of books on the brain, so he's pretty famous for reversing Alzheimer's. But some of his early work, he was using these SPECT scans, S-P-E-C-T, SPECT scans on the brain, and he talks about patients that are on long-term benzodiazepine drugs, their brain scans look like an alcoholic's brain, just mush from an energy standpoint. So a SPECT scan is basically measuring the energetics, the mitochondrial. That's one way to measure the mitochondria.
50 million Americans?
SPECT scan?
I don't doubt it one bit.
50 million? That's like one in five.
Well, and kids. There's so many kids with depression.
Jack Cruz, he made the prediction last year before the Super Bowl. He said, watch the Super Bowl. There's going to be multiple concussions. Now, I watched football growing up and even now some, and there'll be concussions here and there, not every game that you see anyways, maybe a little that you didn't notice. So he predicted three, and the reason he predicted that was because Verizon was given permission to put, I think it was 12,000 or maybe it was 1,200, probably 1,200, 5G antennas in that stadium. So Dr. Cruz knows what a 5G antenna is going to do to your mitochondria in your body, but in your brain also. So your brain's mitochondrial dysfunction will be so great under that much 5G that it won't take much of a hit for that brain to get a concussion. So there were 3 concussions in last year's Super
What's
Bowl.
What's a 5G antenna for?
It's the new wave of cell phone, the next wave of technology for your cell phone. You know, 3G, 4G, LTE, 5G.
Oh, okay.
I think Lubbock's getting it. I know Austin has it. Nashville has it. I think it's coming to Lubbock. But what the 5G does, this is the same as all these are different wavelengths. So we're talking about sunlight versus blue light from your light bulbs and iPad screens, but also the EMFs, non-native EMFs, man-made EMFs, coming off your cell phone like a 5G, it disrupts the mitochondria in the brain, so you're going to be more susceptible to a concussion. And there were 3 in that last Super Bowl, and I forget the guy's name on the Patriots, that it wasn't much of a hit. I mean, it was a hit where you think, that wasn't much of anything, and he was out cold. So he was right there, but here's the next thing he predicted, is these cities that implement the 5G, you're going to see more mood disorder. There you go. There's already 50 million on Xanax and clonazepam.
Yeah.
So the canary in the coal mine is going to be mood disorder and autoimmunity. Autoimmune diseases are going to skyrocket. Mood disorders are going to, we're already seeing it, but it's going to exponentially skyrocket in the cities and not in the smaller towns or rural areas where they don't have the 5G, because it is such a disruptor to the mitochondria.
What about the microwave?
5G makes a microwave look like nothing. I mean,
well, we're bombarded.
You could sleep
anyway
inside a microwave and be safer than what a 5G is going to be.
Well, we're bombarded anyway with radio frequency everywhere. Like talking right now, we're on radio frequency.
Well, then you have Wi-Fi in your house.
You have it all over the place. Well, there was a local doctor here. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. His name escapes me. You might know, but this was back in the early 90s, late 80s. He was very well-renowned cardiologist or something. Anyway, he was one of these first guys. You know, when the first brick cell phones came out, you know, he got one. A lot of doctors purchased these cell phones to connect with patients and the clinics and whatnot. But he was on this phone just constantly. And he developed a really weird brain cancer, and it killed him. And his family at the time, and I think to this day, contends that because he held this very powerful RF frequency, radio frequency up to his head all the time, could have perhaps contributed. There's no way to link it.
Right.
But, you know, these cell phones back then were very, very, very powerful. To the text line we go, says, hey, Doc, could they have had enough info to diagnose skin cancer 150 years ago? Just trying to have the naysayers' questions and comments. So, in other words, how do we know for sure? I mean, 150 years ago, there was no instances.
There were pathologists 150 years ago, 100 years ago. There were pathologists who would do the autopsies or take biopsies, study them under the microscope, and look at these. You can diagnose cancer with microscopic changes of the cell, and that's what a pathologist does.
Yeah.
When you go get a little punch biopsy at your doctor's office of a little scaly red spot on your arm that won't go away for 3 months, they send it to the pathologist, and he slices it up. He puts some dye on it, looks under the microscope, and there's certain characteristics of it that he will call squamous cell carcinoma, basal cell carcinoma, or melanoma. And so those same techniques were available 100 years ago. Medical history is fascinating. When you really go back, last week I had the privilege of listening to a presentation by one of the leaders of our health community here in West Texas. But the interesting thing was he was quoting average lifespan 100 years ago, average lifespan even in the 1930s, and it was like 62 years old. And kind of where the lecture went from there was basically aerobic exercise helped to extend life, and all the medical technologies helped to extend life to now where you have a 78-year average lifespan in America. But when you go back and dive into the literature, into the stats a little more, it's people back then were living to be 80 years old just like we are today. However, the infant mortality rate was 10% in the early 1900s, where now it's less than 1%. So if you live past 5 years old, you live long, like just like everybody else, 80 to 100 years old. In fact, I've got photographs of 102, 104, 100-year-old guys from the American that were alive and fought in the American Revolution. Wow. Photographs.
Oh my gosh.
Of the first photographs that were ever produced were of these guys. The point of that is 80 to 100 years old, and they were all trim, too, by the way. If you made it past your first few birthdays and got over, you know, where diphtheria didn't kill you, then it was the same. Well, I don't know where I was going with this, except that the naysayers tend to go back to, well, we only used to live to be 40 years old. No, we didn't. Socrates was 70, but he was murdered. I mean, everyone lived to be 80, roughly 70 to 80 years old. There plenty lived to be into their hundreds. The longevity plan is a book by Dr. Day talks about in China, the longevity village. They're the most centurions of any village in the world. They live to be 110, 112, 115, totally well, too, by the way, not sick. So you've got to be careful when you start questioning history. And, well, we didn't have cancer back then because we couldn't diagnose it. Same with autism. Well, we were just not diagnosing it. Our diagnostic techniques are better now, and there's just not validity to that.
Well, and so they prolong your life, and you live to 85, but what's your quality of life?
Well, that's a very good question. And 100 years ago, cancer and heart attacks were very, very rare. People died of old age or pneumonia, basically, which we still die from pneumonia these days. But yeah, quality of life. Our life span curve is one thing, but the quality of life curve is another thing. And our quality of life curve starts to go down about 40 years old, where it used to be where quality of life curve and lifespan curve dropped at the same time. People were up and walking and able-bodied mentally and physically until within 12 months of their death. I mean, it was that close of a curve. So, anyways, cancer, you can go back and look on autopsy reports in the turn of the century, 1900. There wasn't even a word in the literature for atherosclerosis, hardening of the artery. Now, I remember dissecting my cadaver in medical school, and there was definitive hardening of that person's arteries in the cadaver. They didn't see it. There wasn't even a word for it in the early 1900s because it didn't exist. So it's not about not having the diagnostic capabilities. It's very easy to feel a hard artery when you're cut through when you're doing an autopsy or a dissection. So I don't buy that we just weren't making the diagnosis. Same with autism. If we missed all these autistic folks 50 years ago, we'd be seeing a whole lot of autistic adults right now. We wouldn't be missing it now, but you don't miss autism. That's a diagnosis. It's impossible. It's one in 38 now, by the way, where it was one in 5,000 when I was born in the mid-70s. And what I'm leading up to, next week we're going to interview Dr. Thomas Cowan, who wrote that book, Human Heart, Cosmic Heart, because, you know, it's clear now the clogged artery theory of heart disease is inaccurate. Most Americans still think it is. They think you eat, you know, bacon and that fat goes straight to your coronary and clogs it like the bacon grease does in your kitchen sink pipe. It doesn't work that way at all. It's well known now that theory is inaccurate, and that's why stents and bypass surgeries do not reduce future heart attacks or death from heart attacks. That study's been out for 10 years now, although most Americans aren't aware of it, that stent and bypass are not going to save your life unless you're in the middle of an acute coronary event right as we speak as you're getting that stent put in. Why is that? Because it's not an anatomy problem. It's not an anatomical issue. It's an energy problem. That's what Dr. Cowan points out in his book so well, and I encourage everyone to go listen to that interview last year. But Cowan wrote another book, and where he's going in this book is right down to energy too. And not only energy that your carburetor makes, the mitochondria, and it's going to pull the water in too that we've been talking about the last couple weeks. He talks about the intracellular water, cytoplasm, we call it in the science world. But the water that's inside our cell absorbs that light that Dr. Cruz is talking about and produces energy. The structuring of the water inside your cell produces energy for your cell, and Dr. Cowan's going to propose next week, there's going to be two parts to that interview because it was so good, it took too long. So it may be in this part two where we talk about the energy of the water So his whole theory is the water inside your cell actually makes more energy than your carburetor does. And your carburetor is just a backup generator, basically. So that's pretty powerful stuff. So where all these guys are going, from Dr. Cruz to Cowan, Morley Robbins, yeah, it's all about the mitochondria. It's all about energy production. Cowan's going to advance it even more, saying it's all about the intracellular water, and it's got to be structured, and it gets structure from the sunlight. So all these guys are kind of coming at it from different angles, but it's all pointing to the same basic thing. God designed us amazingly. Mm-hmm. It's such an amazing, creative, incredible feat of engineering, if you want to call it that. And it's so intricately designed, and we're scratching the surface of our understanding of it. So for that study that Wade read earlier to say we've figured out this one previously unknown little pathway and we're going to micromanage it with a drug, I mean, you're just asking for trouble. Respect the creation and get back to stewarding it the way God intended it to be stewarded. Obviously, part of that's the sunlight. You want to be under the convenience of a microwave oven and a 5G cell tower and all this blue light. Okay, there's going to be consequences to that, though. So that's the big question. How many hits can we take, whether that be standard American diet, Roundup-laden coffee beans in our coffee in the morning, chemically infested preservatives, artificial sweeteners, and et cetera, in our food? How many hits?
In your mouth.
How many hits can we take from our mouth? We've learned about root canals and mercury in the fillings that do leach out, even though the dentists are taught that it doesn't. The mercury does leach out. Can we take that hit and a dietary hit and a stress hit and a blue light hit from our light bulbs and our iPhone and then the 5G tower coming on, never getting outside, never moving, drinking dead water instead of structured water, eating dehydrated food, eating table salt that man's made instead of sea salt that God made? And that's the big question. When's your teeter-totter gonna tip? Because God designed the body to take hits, and we, the antioxidant enzymes and some other mechanisms in the body, I mean, it'll patch it up, just like these Navy guys out on the boats in the, you know, in the war, or a pilot, the helicopter pilots. My cousin's a helicopter pilot in Afghanistan. They can take some hits. I mean, those boats and helicopters can take some bullets, some grenades, some whatever, but how many hits can it take? It's designed to take them. But when's a teeter-totter going to shift and you got too many hits without enough capacity to overcome those hits? And that's what probably we're dealing with here. And everyone's individual. Some will have more of an ability to. And that's where the naysayers will come in. They can sit under blue lights and eat garbage and whatever, never get up and move. And maybe they just can take enough hit for a while to say it's okay. But I don't think anybody's going to be able to take all the hits of modern life and not have a consequence from it. So where you can, Melody, it may not be 5 minutes fully naked every hour of the day, but even morning and evening on your face and arms, roll your sleeves up and face or, you know, drink your morning coffee looking out your east window instead of at your cell phone. Just take a 30-minute break and hit the cell phone later. You know, these little things, it may be enough to give you the power and ability to take the hit and keep on going. And we didn't even get into flu shot. I wanted to mention that today because my wife went into a pharmacy locally here to pick something up.
A lot of them are even, I've seen places free.
And they bombarded her with, get your flu shot. And then it was playing on the overhead speaker. They had this advertisement. And the warning lights are just going off in her head, even if she knew nothing about the truth on the flu shot. Just the fact it's such a commodity now. Mm-hmm. It is such a money-making commodity. That's a big red flag when you've got undue bias, financial incentive. But that's a hit. The aluminum and the other adjuvants that they have to put in there to elicit the immune response, that's a hit. The aluminum is an absolute neurotoxin that has no value, no biological value, and it is an absolute energy stealer from your mitochondria. You want to talk about a grenade going off in your mitochondria, put a bunch of aluminum in it.
What about aluminum foil? Do you use that?
I don't. I mean, I'll use it just to cover a dish, like in the fridge or something, maybe. But I'm not going to, like, heat stuff up and stuff like that.
Bake something and put foil over it?
Parchment paper is what I'll use. like if I need to line something and bake it or something like that. But that's another one of those hits. You know, if you're doing everything else right, your mouth is clean, your diet's otherwise clean, you're getting good sleep, your circadian rhythm's right, you're getting the right sunlight, you can probably handle some aluminum. Maybe even aluminum directly into your muscle with a shot every single year. But that's always the gamble. How do you know how much you can take? So the things you know that are going to disrupt your mitochondria that you know for sure, avoid it.
Do they still put all that in animal vaccines as well?
Yes, as far as I know. I haven't studied the animal vaccines.
Well, we don't really board our pets anymore, so we're not getting the vaccines for them. And, of course, your vet is kind of like, you got to have vaccines.
The whole deal, they don't... usually a vaccine's not going to have the full bug, the whole germ, the whole flu virus. They're just going to chop up that flu virus and give you one little piece of it, the piece that'll cause your immune system to say, hey, I recognize that little part, and so I'll make an antibody to that part. So when the whole flu bug comes in you later, it'll recognize that one part and attack it and kill it. So all the chopped up little parts of the flu virus, they give you one little part of it. Well, that's not enough in the shot to elicit an immune response. So they've got to add other stuff to the shot that agitates your immune system to encourage that immune system to respond to that one little bug part. So aluminum and other adjuvants are put in there to irritate and agitate the immune system. So imagine in an animal, it's going to be the same thing. It's only a part of the bug, the black leg or whatever the different bug is. So they're going to have to put other agitators in there. And talking to a recent cattleman, it was very interesting. He told me they biopsied the livers of their cattle twice a year. Living, they didn't kill them, they didn't butcher the cow, they just took a biopsy of the liver to study the mineral content. Mm-hmm. And then they specifically remineralized that cow, and the cows where they remineralized aggressively and their biopsies showed that they had good remineralization, they had less liver flukes, less fungus, less infection in general, needed less steroid and antibiotics, they were healthier. Why? Because they had the minerals. What the minerals do, they provide the energy to the immune system to fight those bugs naturally. So give the body what it needs, avoid what it doesn't, and keep getting educated. That's the point of this show, and our clinic is to educate. The root word of physician is teacher. So we'll keep teaching and push back against this wave of chronic disease in West Texas and the world.
Okay.
Thank you all for letting me ramble. Next week, Dr. Thomas Cowan will be on, so stay tuned for that next couple of weeks, actually.
And you've been listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Again, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Stick around. We'll be right back with more.